Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution. Today we're going to have a show about education. I know we've done it in the past, but it just never seems to, we never seem to get to the bottom of it because it seems like a moving target. I think I've become more focused on the mental health aspect of education. It seems to be pushed to the forefront. And as a disclaimer, I just want to say if anybody is having any kind of mental health issue, then I really recommend that you get help, that you seek help from a professional. And this show is about not the people who actually need it. It's about what the system is doing to try to, I think, create a catchment and to put people in a position where they're going down a path that is going to be controlled. And I think we're going to speak about that and with eloquence. And today I have one of my favorite guests, Miss Lynn Taylor. Lynn is an education expert, somebody who spent the time, the energy to read everything that's out there from the globalist perspective, UN, and what's going on in our country, and to break it down so that the average person, the parent, the people who are really interested in education, and those that don't even know what they don't know, can actually learn about what's going on and how our children are being, I think, changed. And Lynn, I want to thank you so much for joining me because I actually know how busy you are.
Oh, well, thank you, Dr. Elena. It's wonderful to be back. I tell you what, we're quite a team together. And so here we are picking up the baton again, and we're going to pass this information to the parents because the parents actually, if you know, you think you might understand what's going on in your schools with the positive behavior interventions or the multi-tier support in your community, do you really know as much as you think you do? And that's probably where we're going to be coming at this from, not to be a condescending, oh, we know it all because we're experts in our field, but because we want to pose it as a question so that you can take the information and go find out what's going on in your neighborhood so that you can affect change.
I think that's well said. And you don't know what you don't know. And I before the show started, I had this feeling, Lynn, that the parents on average know there's something that's not going on, that's not right. But there's so much, I don't know, fog of war out there that you really can't put your hand on it. And it's now it's mental health in the rolled it into gun control and children. And what's going on again? Let's highlight the fact that our education is not what we think it is. We have two tiers, don't we?
Right, we do. Mm-hmm. We have those who will lead and those who will be put to work. And that's basically what your education system has become designed to actually produce. And the horrible thing about it, Dr. Elena, and we've talked about this I don't know how many times, is that it's not just for our public school students. These mental health overreaches are not just for our public school students. I can tell you that one of the ways that this was foisted upon all of us was through the Every Student Succeeds Act and with the recalculation of what was known as Title I funding. Now, it's still called Title I, but the entire change was taking it from per pupil needs. In other words, those children who actually needed that kind of support, be it behavioral health, mental health, special needs for physical problems, that sort of thing. And it shifted it to whole school. And when it shifted it to whole school under the Every Student Succeeds Act, this is the danger, because then your entire school, not just your students, but anyone who's in that school, so that would be your leaders and staff, has to be assessed mentally. And 9 times out of 10, what we're seeing happen is that more times than not, you come out with some sort of label saying, well, you have this problem, you have that problem. And because you have these problems, well, now we have to either over-medicate you or over-program you to have some sort of intervention so that you can come out not as God intended you to, but as the system dictates.
Who's making these determinations? Are these physicians? Are these educators? My secondary question is, who stands to gain? But let's start off with the first part of it, because it's always that, right? But
yeah,
who
yeah.
are these
well,
people?
Okay, I can tell you who recalculated the formula for Title I, and that was a politician. Now, who 9 times out of 10 gives these assessments because the Title I shifted from per pupil to whole school? 9 times out of 10, it is not a medically qualified doctor or nurse who is trained in mental health treatment. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be an overworked teacher, teacher's aide, or someone who has come in as a community liaison. Whether or not they are actually qualified to give these assessments is not really being talked about, because, again, most of the time it's given to the teacher. Well, if a teacher happens to have a mental health degree, that should solve the problem. But, Elena, how many teachers do you know in the public system or in the community healthcare system who happen to be teachers who have that kind of degree?
I don't know of many, if at all. And this is a
That's
specialty.
Right.
This is children. So we
right.
have whole children
right.
psychiatrists and therapists that specialize in children, in developmental psychiatry, that sort of thing. We're talking about, sounds like, an algorithm driven, perhaps, you know, I think politics always plays.
Yeah, it absolutely is, because this is usually a computer-based assessment. And we have talked about how we have seen the algorithms shift in favor of those who stand to profit. And that's exactly who will be profiting. It's not going to be the family by getting the proper help that they may need, or having the family who needs it be passed over because this other person has a better label. Do you see where I'm going?
I do.
I mean, if I'm going to have a label of, say, I have post-traumatic stress disorder, okay, I might be getting funds that someone who's physically handicapped actually needed. Now, I know we're not supposed to say handicapped anymore. We're supposed to say disabled. So I'm sorry if I'm not politically correct, but I tell it like it is.
Well, I like that, actually. So it sounds like somebody gets to put their finger on the scale of the next, of who benefits from whatever largesse is coming. This is also money, I would think. It's based on a lot of things. How much money's floating around with this?
Okay, I can tell you that the social and emotional learning that is attached to probably 95% of the programming that goes with these labels, whether they are actually labels that need to stick or they're ones that need to be, you know, peeled back. The social and emotional industry has become a cottage one. So in other words, anybody who can come up with some sort of product, be it a stuffed animal or maybe a service where you go and talk to a counselor or anybody like that, they are projected by 2027 to be making profits of $30 billion off of not just our students, but off of every one of us, because we have a government that is manipulating our mental health every day through propaganda, distraction, and distortion.
Man, that's a mouthful. So I have this. When I take a step back, I'm seeing that as a pattern, and it's like a template everywhere. We're talking, if we want to really expand this out, the private prison system, where you know, you have the system set up so these kids end up. I'm going to ask this, and I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to ask this question when we come back. So let's come back first. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor. And before the break, Lynn, I'm feeling some kind of way, because I think I'm seeing a pattern here. You have this system where you can basically put these children like chess pieces emotionally into whatever peg you want to put them into. You have this, and it's always existed, but I think it's really now very almost firm, this school to prison pathway. You know, if the kids don't fit a certain paradigm, they rebel in any kind of way. Does that open them up to being fodder for this system, whether that's child protective, perhaps, or prison, or there seems to be some sort of stick involved if you don't fit where you're supposed to go.
Right. Well, that's what these interventions are supposed to do, is they're supposed to put you in a system that you necessarily don't want to be. And that is through, you know, what your courses are. And these assessments will absolutely streamline you for a career. So it may not necessarily be, prison. It might not necessarily be child protective services, which we know is as corrupt as could possibly be. It is more times than not going to put you into a work-based system so that you come out a trained monkey.
Is there a connection with the social side of this? And I'm talking about economic, because we're having children.
Absolutely. This has everything to do with economics, because our government sees us not as a free people, but a people who needs to be put to work to better the economy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many shows you and I have done where we have brought this up, especially through the science in science, technology, engineering, and math, because again, we have evidence that points back to about the time Common Core was rolled out. STEM was created as an acronym and foisted upon the nation to create STEM education for STEM people, to have STEM jobs, to create a STEM economy for the greater global good. I mean, you know, you could probably put that on a t-shirt and sell it in your office, because we've said it so many times. But one of the things that I have noticed in this mental health overreach is that there's a document that I was gifted by the late Charlotte Iserby. And she was one of the most iconic education watchdogs and whistleblowers that we have in this country. And when we lost her, we lost a true treasure. Now, if you hear her interviews with me, you will hear that she calls me a national treasure as well. That is not a compliment that I throw out to brag about myself, but to let you know that we were on such the same wavelength when it came to what we were seeing happen through the name of education. And shortly before she passed, she sent me a particular document that was printed in, I think it was probably 1979. I erroneously put 1973 when I meant 1979, so please pardon me for that. But it was basically a blueprint that was trotted out here in North Carolina, where I happen to live. And it was this model for raising a whole new generation of children, and they were supposed to be healthy from their education, their health. They were supposed to be, you know, just this almost whole child wraparound service kind of stuff that you and I have talked about. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes this particular document so interesting and why Charlotte sent it to me was because she said it was the blueprint that was meant for North Carolina when, in essence and in its truth, it was a national model that was made for our federal government. Now, I thought it was for the Department of Education, but I have since found out it was not only for the department, the U.S. Department of State, or the State Department, as we call it, but also what was known as the HUE, which was the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Because remember, this document predates when the U.S. Department of Education even existed. So that's why it wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. But that was one of the questions that you had for me, was mm-hmm. where did this come from? Mm-hmm. So it actually came from one State Department, and then their department that was housed within the State Department was this, which is the health, education, and welfare. Now, what have we seen in 2022? What have we seen since this particular document? We've seen we have a Department of Health, we have a Department of Education, and welfare is split between the two.
Mm. Wow. So is this, you know, a child health plan? Is that the same thing, same blueprint?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a blueprint, and it was supposed to set up, from what I have been able to understand, it was supposed to set up this kind of utopia that Johnny and Susie, when they hit the schoolyard the very first day of school, that they would be so well-rounded and so healthy in every aspect of their lives that there was no way they could ever fail. It was, you show up. Let's see, what was it? It was When the child enters the school, they are healthy and ready and set to succeed. Now, again, success by whose definition?
Right.
In this case, the system.
So let's take another bird's eye view of this system. I mean, it sounds like you're just, you know, being indoctrinated to perform your duty, but who gets to decide? And let's back up. I just want to back up. How do you know if someone's going to be put into a silo of being a doctor versus a writer versus a teacher? Who gets to decide that? You know, is this based? And if it is based on, someone has to lose, basically, I'm saying. Mm-hmm. There's a loser in this. What's the baseline for this? Is it race? Is it sex? Is it economic status? There has to be something that they're making their choices from. I don't think it's all AI and everybody's equal. I really don't.
Right. Well, the baseline for this would be your career slotting assessments. Okay. And those sometimes can be very accurate and other times not so much. I mean, you know, one of the examples that I've given on several interviews is this particular assessment is called Work Keys, and it is created by the ACT company, which creates one of the high stakes assessments that kids use to find out, hey, can I go to college? But this Work Keys does it from a job slotting side, and how you fall into that. Let's say that I took it and it's going to say, oh, well, Lynn's proficient in paper folding. But what happens, Dr. Elena, if I hate paper folding? I'm stuck. This is the premise that this is all based on. And it's not for academics. It's not for you to be who God made you. It is what the system is telling you. And it is economically driven.
So from the standpoint of everybody, I mean, everybody doesn't love school. But one of the things that really I enjoyed was the ability to explore, to see what I was good at, to, you know, really, this is all about learning as much as you can before you make a decision, like you do in college. I mean, the whole thing is about breadth of knowledge, right? Depth. And then you decide. So if you're in this very shallow, one-dimensional silo, is this something that generates more mental issues? I mean, you're going to school, you're unhappy. Where does that, I mean, you have no way to, as a child, to express that. Even adults can't express it, to tell you the truth. So are we creating more mental challenges with this type of system?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's part of the fallout, is that they knew that this was going to create. And oh, goody, here comes the government with what? Oh, solutions. And guess what? Funding. And where's this coming from? Well, from what I found with this particular document that Charlotte sent me, it's going to be quite a mix of public-private partnerships. Uh-oh. And oh, where have we talked about
that's
before,
bad.
Dr. Elena?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me give you a little bit of history, because this will help our parents answer those questions. Ooh, did I really know this? And how is this going to really help me? Because history always helps us, okay? This particular document was supposedly written by the former governor of North Carolina, Jim Hunt, and he served the state from 1977 through 1985, and then again, 1993 to 2001. Now, he was lieutenant governor under the former governor, Hal Holzer, and these two dudes were very, very good friends. They were both tied into the Southern Regional Educational Board, and this particular board is still in existence. They love the Common Core. They love the workforce readiness. They love the mental health overreaches. And they serve 16 states. Okay. Now, this particular movement was part of Hunt's, oh goodness, hang on just a second. He dubbed it, let's see, what did he dub it? I'm so sorry. I have all these notes, and then what did I do? I get them all confused. I'm so sorry. It was the whole goal was to have this particular healthcare plan come from education, come from what's going on at home, come from what's going on in the community, to move a system to be more comprehensive and complex in the services that it offered to students in the name of coming to school, being ready. Well, that's what you went to kindergarten for, was mm-hmm. to learn, not to come to school to already be ready. You went to kindergarten to learn your ABCs. Now they're expecting you to come to kindergarten not only knowing how to use your ABCs, but how to read, write, spell, and interact. We're not going to do that because we're putting too much pressure on our children, which is why they're imploding. And they're either imploding, which is hurting themselves mentally or sometimes physically to the point of suicide, or they're exploding, where they're hurting others. This particular system was done that way. And these were formula grants that were given to the Southern Regional Board of Education by the federal government. Now, later on, it became the Department of Education. But I'm going to tell you what, the Southern Regional Education Board started in 1948, and their particular foray into education was higher education for the economic sake. It wasn't until 1980 that they decided, oh yeah, we not only have to do higher education, we need to bring in K-12 education, because after all, we're missing out on economic prowess if we don't have younger and younger children. So we also know that in 1981, Southern Regional Education Board was one of the first in the nation to come up with, we need academic standards for education that had to align to the National Assessment of Education Progress, which is aligned to the United Nations global measure of assessing what you're learning and what you're not learning. So this is taking nonprofits and nonpartisan entities, and it's throwing it together under Hunt's agenda. And it is absolutely mind-boggling. Now, why is Hunt so significant to the national scheme of education? Because, believe it or not, Dr. Elena, he was dubbed as the nation's first education governor because he created Smart Start, which is tied to this blueprint that Charlotte sent me. Now, it also ties to, I hope you're ready, the Ford Foundation, Harvard University. It also ties Governor Hunt to the Institute, Achieve Incorporated. And its funding doesn't come through education. It comes through Department of Health and Human Services. And it tracks students via data that's called Performance-Based Improvement Systems, or what's now known as an EC profile or early child profile. So we're setting up data tracking from healthcare and education at tremendously too early of an age.
Mm. Wow. I want to think about that and come back, because just tying all these things, there's no privacy in any of this. And well, let's talk about that when we come back, because it's a sure. big picture that's starting to come into focus. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and you can listen to her new TV show, or watch her new TV show. It's called Point Blank on Catching Fire News. And you can also listen to her podcast with her partner on Liberty Bells, and they're on Rumble and Facebook. So Lynn, I mean, this is indoctrination on a whole nother level. I know you're speaking about the American education system, but you know, we used to have the best education system in the entire world. So my question is, has all this already happened? Do you know if all this has already happened worldwide and we're the last ones in, just like Obamacare?
Mm-hmm.
It is?
I do believe so. I actually do. But it didn't just happen overnight. And mm-hmm. this is where a lot of the parents need to know this history, because it's been a framework that has been in play for so long, and it was going on right under our noses, and we never even knew it because we didn't know we needed to know it. But if you know it now, it helps sense for what you're seeing going on in your school. Now, I wanted to let you know that it was back in March of 1979 that Governor Hunt presented this particular document that's and it's titled Child Health Plan for Raising a New Generation to Meet with the New Legislation that was created for Governor Hunt by the General Assembly of North Carolina, and it was titled the New Generation Bill, or formerly North Carolina Senate Bill 389. And you can find that if you go in the archives for the North Carolina General Assembly. Now, why did this happen to North Carolina as a blueprint and no other state? Because North Carolina loves to be first at so many things. Think about it. We're known as what? First in flight. We're known as we have the only governor in the nation who's so education-minded that he's named the first educationer, first educational governor in the nation. So in 1974, to go back just a tiny bit, the U.S. Public Law 93-641 or the National Health Planning and Resource Development Act required every state to come up with a plan. And it just so happens that 5 years later, North Carolina charted theirs out first. So that's why it was adopted as a blueprint.
So does the states, if they adopt this, was this a template that they can get money for their education system as well? Because this is a self, it sounds like a self-funding prophecy, you know, a project as well.
Oh, it's not just self-funding. You have private corporations and public services. And as late as 2015, you can see that the funding has shifted. I hope you're ready for this. To, drum roll please, the CDC.
Mm, great.
Mm-hmm. So, I thought you'd like that.
Love it. So this whole biometric vaccine ID card, you name it, it could all be one big ball of information that ties you into the system. So, you know, again, we're going to talk about or mentioning Obamacare for a reason, because everything went electronic, where everything was in a database. Every time your doctor writes a prescription, every time you write a note electronically, it's not in the doctor's office, it's in a cloud. And so it's accessible by every single agency that wants to use it.
Right. Anyone who has a finger in the pie for education, labor, healthcare, commerce, any of those, they can have access to this. They absolutely can. So, you know, this is the premise for that whole child garbage that we hear. Mm-hmm. And let me just point out one thing. The reason I call it garbage is because at no time does any teacher or educator go, oh, well, I'm only going to educate half a child. I'm only going to address this, this, and this. No, they educate. You're supposed to educate the mind. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to educate where you work, where you live, how you get your health care, and all these other sorts of things. You absolutely don't. And we saw with COVID, it was a perfect example because we saw the technology follow the children home. And we saw that it took not only the children, but it was like, okay, well, guess what? The children live with a family. Well, hey, family, come on down to the school. Get all your health care needs here. Get all your public services here. It created those hubs that you and I have talked about so many times. And of course, there have been incentives and money thrown at this left and right since this public health care law. But let's point out, you pointed out Obamacare. Let's please point out, for those who think that Trump got us out of Obamacare, it was rebranded the Affordable Care Act. Nothing in it changed. And I know you can speak on that way more than I can.
Well, no, nothing has changed. And it's not about patient care. It's about data, information, and population-based healthcare. It's just feeding information into a main system so that they can do actuarial data on people, it seems to me. So this is all about one big catchment. Education is key, because I think you have to, from what you're describing, you have to educate people who don't want to think on their own, who don't want to pursue their own destiny, and are happy with being part of a whole. This whole COVID situation is a perfect example. You know, you're doing it for the group. You're doing it for other people. And it's just, it's kind of strange in a way. But that's the and people are all in on that. You cannot break them from. It's interesting. It's this dichotomy between being your own person, but you're really not. And if you try to think outside the box, you get smacked down somehow. It's working in a way that it's coming behind, you know, sideways.
Right, it is. Now, I don't particularly like this organization, and I'm using North Carolina as an example. So, you know where to, you know to look in similar places in your state, because I realize not everyone lives in the same place. But if we can start looking at what's going on in one state, remember, this is not Vegas, okay? We know that supposedly what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Well, what happens in education happens in every state. And so when I give examples of particular places, it's a clue for parents to say, okay, wait a minute, that's where I need to be looking in my state. But there's a particular group called EdNC. And if you look at them online right now, you will see a map that is in white and purple. And it points to you and names the school, Dr. Elena, that now deliver health services at schools that are also known as health centers, and they are state funded. Now, where does the funding come from? Well, it came from the Title I that was reworked that went and shifted it from per pupil to whole school. It also comes in through your health and human services, and it comes in through so many other different ways because, again, the hubs are your schools, and they are supposed to give your neighborhood all the essential services. So think of it as a one-stop mini mall for government services to help not guide your family, but dictate where your family goes. And so I just wanted to point that out. But we need to understand this can all tie back. Every bit of this can all tie back to the early Health Insurance Portability Act from 1966. So we've got modern day career politicians who are reaching way back in history, Dr. Elena, pulling out these caveats of this law and that law, and they're bastardizing them to fit this status quo. And the reason why is because it has to marry up with the United Nations Comprehensive Mental Health Plan that is supposed to be fully in gear by 2030.
We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I want to start the this end of the segment with what is that? What is the mental health plan? Are they trying to say everybody's got a mental health issue, so they need to be somehow controlled? Who, I mean, we're all different. How the heck can they have one plan that fits everybody?
Quite quickly, yes, we're supposed to be nanny state controlled from the top down. We are supposed to be told where we will go, what we will think, how we will think, how we will act. And if we do not comply, then there's punishment.
Wow, this sounds like prison. Oh, man. So we talked, you briefly talked, but I want to revisit these people who, kids who got computers that went home with them and the school was giving them out for free, these Obama phones, you know, all this thing the government was giving out for free. Is it really? Or were they, is it just an avenue to literally monitor you?
Okay. Would you repeat that last part? I did not, somehow it faded out.
Is it a way to monitor you? All of these freebies, these internet access, they're talking about everybody being controlled or having access to broadband. You know, in my opinion, nothing's for free.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And this was the beauty behind it, that the status quo system wanted to sneak into your house. I mean, if you've got smart appliances, you're being so data tracked, it's not even funny. If you brought home a school-provided device, not just necessarily a laptop, it not only knows what your student is doing, it knows what everyone in that family is doing. And people are going, oh, that's not possible. That's not, oh, no, you're just making that up. You just want to scare people. No, if you look hard enough, you can find the information that backs every bit of this up. You also have people who are still smart enough to go, hey, wait a minute, something's not right. I need to check into this. Oh, holy cow, look what I just found.
Well, I remember reading stories and hearing on the news of people being listened to on their computer. You know, the kids bringing it home or the webcam was on and they didn't know it. I mean, all sorts of bizarre stuff that goes on. But the sanctuary of your home was really seemed to me like it was being invaded. On that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. You know, Lynn, I remember when we were in school, none of this stuff was going on. You had a pencil, you had a paper, you had a book bag. There was nothing going on except you doing your work. This is a whole nother level. And this whole emotional side of this, you know, it's bad enough being a kid growing up, going through puberty and doing all the things that happen to you naturally. But this seems to me like this is an agenda that is designed to manipulate that. And mm-hmm. when that happens, first of all, you can't have control over something like this. And there's unintended consequences. And, you know, IQ is what we used to take tests for. Now there's something called psychometrics. What's that?
Oh, it's also known as EQ or emotional quotient. Now, here's the interesting thing about that, and thank you for bringing that up. You're absolutely right. We did. We took IQ tests. I also can remember those horrible bubble tests
yeah.
that were supposed to be, you know, you know, how well you were learning and that sort of thing. I also know the military used to use them as well to see if you were, you know, suited for the service. And I can tell you when they came through with that military exam and we all met in the cafeteria and we took that, I guessed at over half of the questions because I'm not mechanically minded. Okay. That's just not my gift. I guessed through over half of that because I'm like, I don't know. I get letters from 3 of the 4 branches of military that I have somehow magically passed their test and, you know, oh, they desire my service. I'm like, first of all, it's not that I don't love my country, but knowing that I guessed over those and knew I didn't know what the heck I was talking about, of course I turned them down because for me, in good conscience, just because the test said I was smart as a whip on, you know, their tests, I knew I wasn't. So I didn't go, but that was my choice. Kids now take these assessments and they're not really getting a choice of where they'll go. It's just, nope, computer said that you need to go down the hall and take baking 101. So there you go. Well, you know, what if you're scared of fire and it's a gas stove? You're toast. And I meant no harm in that, but that was a pun. Sorry. I'm sorry. We have to bring some levity in here somewhere. But yes,
always.
We used to test our intelligence, which was, how smart are you? You know, how well can you think? Now it's all based on this emotional garbage that is tied to your mental health. And I'm not disparaging those who truly need the help. I have family members I love dearly who seriously have mental health issues, but they have been blessed enough to seek out the professionals who have the absolute qualifications. I would never dream of letting a school system dictate my mental health plan for my child. I absolutely would not. But now they've been turned into emotional quotient. And I have done an article on my blog, commoncorediva.com. And this is what you're going to need to look for to find out just how perverted this has come. And when I mean perverted, I don't mean in a sexual manner. I mean we've taken something that was supposed to be a tool to help us, and we've now turned it into something to control us. And that is GQ or gender quotient. And the Pearson Publishing, one of the biggest Common Core publishers out there, came up with this, and it was a way to go, well, men think this way and women think this way. And because of the differences, here's what we can expect out of productivity on the job market with the dudes, and here's what we can expect out of the women. Now, I'm sorry, it's not rocket science that there's a difference in the way men and women think. And I don't need a Common Core publisher to tell me that, oh, yes, I've just come up with this assessment that's going to do a much better job of slotting how men think and how women think. All you have to do is go talk to married people and you will get an education way quicker than you could this assessment.
Well, these assessments are, it's schizophrenic because they're telling us now that there is like 15,000 sexes. So how do they even come up with this, men versus women? I mean, they can't even keep their stuff straight. So,
well, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, again, this article is a bit dated.
So apparently.
It might have been before the, oh, yes, guess what? We're going to go and mess with God and say, oh, no, there's not men and women. Now we have, I'm not even going to grant I'm just not even going to utter the rest of them because they're just absolutely ludicrous.
Well, it's confusing children. And I don't think confusion makes for a child that's balanced. That's the one thing I remember about school. The teachers who were the most, who were strict, who had boundaries, I did the best in those classes because I knew what was expected of me. Now there's none of that going on. So if these teachers are able to say that this child has a mental struggle, is the next level. Are they also medicating these kids? Because that's running rampant too. And are they allowed to do that?
Oh, if it's done in the name of mental health clarity, absolutely. Absolutely. And you would not, well, actually, you probably would because you're a doctor. The number of mental health medications out there that truly help versus those that don't is off the charts. I can tell you from family experience, I have seen one person in the course of their treatment go through, and please don't laugh when you hear this, or please don't sigh when you hear this, 20 different medications before one that was truly helpful was found. Now, why we don't do that to any other population, why are we doing this to those who really need help and want help and are going about the proper channels to get it, and this is what we're giving them?
I know the medication
is,
of course it's money. It's always money. Follow the money. But is there any sidetrack where you can seek therapy, where you're going to speak, you know, to somebody, and somebody who's not going to medicate you, somebody who can resolve issues? Is that also being encouraged, or is it just give them a medication and keep it moving?
It's get in the system, Dr. Elena, so that you can be taken care of. And this is what I resent, because the system is corrupt. Why would I entrust someone who is in need of mental health services to go get in a corrupt system? It's about as much sense as I'm going to go take my adoption through a corrupt child protection service. No, I'm not. I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to try to seek out the best medical help. Likewise, if I was going to adopt, I'd seek out the best adoption service out there. Mm-hmm. Is there corruption in every system we have? Yes, but are they all corrupt? No.
Ma'am, this is, you know, with everything that's going on from a political standpoint, you're putting yourself or your child in a whole nother catchment, aren't you? We got red flag laws. If you have a mental health issue, somebody can come and swoop in on you now. Are you going to be tagged with this letter that'll follow you? What jobs you can have, whether or not you can protect yourself, where you can live. I mean, I can just imagine how this can be used as a grid that can work against you.
And that's the point, because it all has to do with that we're not worth much as living, breathing flesh humans that God made us to be. No, we need to go be put on some stupid cyber thingy for economic prowess. And that's just so twisted and so wrong. And we shouldn't be going here, but we need to understand, Dr. Elena, that this has been a system that has been put in place well before you and I were ever born. This particular progressive movement is at least 100 years old. It's the fact that we had our ancestors fight against this system, not kowtow to it. And that's where the big shift has been. And the reason why we've had that big shift from fighting it to accepting it is because we had a watered down education system that told kids who are now parents what to think, not how to think. to look to the government to be the only solution they would ever need instead of God.
I absolutely agree with you. And right now, I think parents, children are so distracted and we're so divided and it's somebody else's fault and it's because of what I look like or who I sleep with or whatever the thing is. How can parents, what is the first thing that you tell parents to try to get control of this situation? What's the first thing that they need to do?
The first thing they need to do is just silence every device. Go out in the middle of the woods if that's what it means for you. Take your family. Have family time. Get to know each other again. Have conversations. Hey, this is what I'd like to do. Or, hey, this is where I'd like to go. Totally just divorce yourself of technology for a day. If you can possibly make it through it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Get to talking with each other. Get your family on the same page because we're better united than we are divided. And this is what our government uses against us. It wants to divide the family, just like it wants to divide neighbor and political parties and communities. I mean, what the heck do you think is going on right now, especially with our corrupt Supreme Court? They are dividing people left and right over things that are not a federal government's business.
I think you're right. And I think it's time that we take our power back and I think highlight what makes us the same. And there's a lot more that makes us, should make us cohesive than to pull us apart.
Right.
Ultimately, every parent, I don't care what you look like, you want your child to thrive, to be emotionally stable, to be contributing members of society, and to love themselves and to love each other, quite frankly, and love being part of this country. Anything that separates that, or it works against all parents. And I hope that the show is giving people some information that they can take it and run with it. I know we only have a few seconds left, but I want to make sure people know how to watch your TV show, how to listen to your podcast, and how to see what you write.
Okay. Common Core Diva is where you can find my blog. If you want to find me on Catching Fire News, I'm so sorry. You can go to the American Policy Center and subscribe to Catching Fire News through them. You can also find me as part of the Liberty Bells on Rumble, and that is a social media platform, and we have a channel there. As always, if you wish to financially bless any of the work that I do, I have a secure donate button on Common Core Diva, and it would be wonderful to be able to have funds so that I can come and speak to your group in person if that is what you would desire, or if we need to set up an online meeting. I'm always available to speak on any of the topics that Dr. and Elena and I have talked about, not only on this show, but on our previous shows, as well as anything that is covered on my blog.
Lynn, I want to thank you for everything you do. You're just a wealth of information and a gift. And I'm so happy that you're my friend. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Dr. Elena. It's always good to have wonderful friends in our corner because, you know, together we can do so much more than apart.
I couldn't have said it better. On that note, thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.